Hi, it's Mary Lou Tyler. I have a wonderful guest today. I just met Deb not too long ago, and I've been a part of her Bright Talk channel. She'll tell you more about that. But she is a person that we're going to really love having on this show today, because Deb is all about questions. She's all about discovering the right questions, getting people, you know, out of their status quo, out of their stupor, out of their trance, so that we can start having those conversations we need at top of funnel. She's the president of People First Productivity Solutions. Is that correct, Deb?
It is. It's a mouthful.
And she's also the author of 20 of the most highly rated sales books of all time, according to HubSpot and Amazon. And the book is called Discover: Questions to Get You Connected. Welcome to the podcast, Deb. So nice to have you.
Really nice to be here, Mary Lou. Thank you for the invitation.
So tell us, you know, what got you interested in the realm of questioning? I mean, how did you get involved in that? What was it that you decided that this was something you were going to be a master of?
I think it was my purpose in life. I'm one of those kids who did the same thing all 2 and 3 year olds do, asking, you know, why and why and why questions incessantly. The problem is I never stopped. And I can remember my parents and my teachers when I went into school telling me, "Now, Debbie, you shouldn't ask so many questions. It's not polite to ask questions." But I just did. I mean, I wanted to know. So I got this all worked out by the time I was in high school. There were actually appropriate places, debate and journalism. So working on the school newspaper, becoming a debater, those were places where questions were a good thing. And then I went on and got a journalism degree, kept using questions and rediscovered sales, which I'd done a little bit of. I was always, you know, the top campfire candy sales girl and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But sales, because I wanted a job at the newspaper and I couldn't get one on the news side, fresh out of school. But I took a sales job in the classified department and questions started serving me really well. When I moved into my first outside territory, I went to the library to find a book on selling, and there was only one on the shelf, Thin Selling. Of course, that was all about questions. So then I started my own research, flash forward 20 years later, buyer side research on questions. And having put a framework together, I've decided that there are only ever 8 purposes that anybody asks a question, and that's the acronym of Discover.
Wow. Okay. This is sounding really juicy. So let me just preface this by I did a webinar on your channel, the Bright Talk channel, and it was about phone habits. And one of the things I offered up was the common questions that I ask. And there were so many people who downloaded that little file. And I'm sure it's, you know, just a tip of the iceberg of what you're going to share with us today with the Discover model. So take it away. Tell us all about it.
Well, sure. Okay. So Discover is an acronym. Each of those letters stands for the purpose for asking a question. And sometimes sellers think too narrowly about questions. We think of them in two ways. We think about using them to qualify a buyer, and we think about using them in a discovery process, a phase of our sales process. And occasionally a seller thinks about them when they close to do an either or a just ask kind of a close. But questions can serve any conversation in a lot more ways. First of all, we know from buyer side research and other bodies of work that questions are one of the fastest ways that we can build bonds and create trust and rapport with people. Mm-hmm. Well, thinking about that changes everything. And I loved your Sales Experts Channel webinar, because you did think about and offer up questions as a way to change things, to change the conversation, to change the relationship, to open up. Really, if we're opening a sale, let's open the conversation. Let's open people in the way that they're thinking. And as you said here at the top, that's about disrupting what they expect from a mm-hmm. salesperson. And creating value that makes them pause and think. Questions do all that.
So let me ask you, we are bombarded with the term creating value, and I'm sure my audience is saying, okay, here's that term again. What does that mean in a questioning world, or how do you ask a question that is a creating value question?
Oh, I love that question. I'm going to break it down a little bit. First of all, let's just take the term create value. Here's how I see it. It's not the same as value that's inherent in your product. Your product, whatever it is delivering some kind of value to some people. That's the bare bones price of admission to ever sell anything.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, there's added value. That's what your company layers in. It's the deal sweeteners. It's the extras. It's the differentiators driven by your company and maybe your marketing department. Created value is neither of those things. Created value happens in the moment, in the experience that you are inviting your buyer into with you. And created value is, for that reason, never generic. Created value is always spontaneous, and it's always about what's happening right now in this moment. So you have to be, especially if you're working on the phone, you have to be so present to understand what matters to this buyer. And what matters, by the way, isn't, I'm not talking about the ultimate value that you're going to deliver with your product and your company's added value. I'm talking about, why would they even spend 10 seconds more on the phone with you? Did you pique their interest? Did you yourself, your human self, bring enough credibility and enough stimulating thought that in that moment there's value for the remaining seconds that I can commit to you? And beyond that, that there's value that you've opened up so that I'll take a full meeting with you and progress through the process of buying with you. So that's what I mean when I say created value. And that's why questions are the number one way. And this isn't me, Deb, saying this. This is buyers we've interviewed. In fact, we very recently completed a B2B buyer survey, a panel study through Santa Clara University with 530 B2B buyers. And among the top behaviors that they told us they want more from sellers are this different kind of question, this dialogue, this rich stop, make me think, stimulate my brain cells. And that's where buyers are missing something from sellers.
That's great information. Okay. So where our audience here are process people, we're prospectors, we're closers. And you mentioned the word model and discover. Is there a way that we can start, I don't know if mapping is the right word, but taking an idea of a question and correlating it to the actual conversation? Or are we training ourselves, when you say to react to the response of the buyer, is there a script in anywhere in here that we can start with to practice to get better at this? Or what is the normal way for us to start along that path of mastery of asking the right questions?
Yeah, so it's a very delicate balance. You don't want to become so process-driven that your questions get in the way of your relationship. Your questions should instead facilitate the relationship. And this is a big miss in the part of some other programs that have been in the past, or maybe more fairly it would be the misinterpretation of some other programs in the past, including SPIN. If you look at SPIN as four questions, 1, 2, 3, 4, I'm done, you've missed the real conversation, the connection, and the value you could have created. So let me put that caveat out first. And then, yes, there is a process for learning and mastering the art of questioning and the connections that and the trust that you can build with questions. Step one is to first become a question detective, to observe what's happening when people on interviews that you might listen to or watch on TV, to pay attention in conversation. What happens when you ask three or four close-ended questions in a row? What happens when you're asking questions because you're fishing to get the answer you already thought of, versus what happens when you ask broader questions that push pause and make people think? But just observing, that's step one. Having the tool of an idea of what are some of these higher purpose questions and what are the eight purposes, in fact, because most sellers only ask three out of those eight. So there's a lot more space to play if you know all eight. Knowing that as you are playing the role of question detective can certainly help. So we have a free tool we're going to give your listeners. So they'll have that context and then they can go out and do a little detective work. And very quickly, they're going to see the impact of stronger questions.
Now, you mentioned three of eight that we all know, or should at least that's like the baseline. What are the three that we know and what are the eight that we should know?
OK, Okay, I'll break it down that way. So this is an acronym, the three that all sellers already ask, all sellers who stay in selling, that is, they ask data questions. You have to ask it data questions, and you often do those as you're qualifying. A data question is a question that simply goes after the fact. It's not about opinions. It's not about anything subjective. You just want the facts, data. The C and the O are the other two. So in the acronym of DISCOVER, I've skipped I and S, but we'll come back to them. Okay. But the C and the O in the word DISCOVER are the other two that most sellers routinely ask. C, I'm calling it consequence. O, that's outcome. Outcome is anything that's about your hopes, dreams, plans, goals, visions of the future. What do you want to have? Consequence is, of course, the flip side of that. What if you don't reach those outcomes? What are the risks if you don't take action? They're sometimes called pain questions.
Mm-hmm.
And when we ask data, outcome, and consequence questions in sales, we then think we have what we need to create a solution and that it should be sufficient to give us the information that will be compelling to the buyer. And the problem is, it doesn't work so well anymore. It used to work just fine. But buyers have caught on, and buyers have become empowered, and buyers are wanting more, including this experience, this value that's created. And data and consequence and outcome questions, they do serve a purpose, but they no longer stand alone. They don't create value because everybody else is doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
The other five have more opportunity for you to create value. And I'll continue going out of order just in the interest of time and being able to go quickly. So the next one, and it's my favorite, is the value question. We need to ask more value questions. They're simple. There's rich information within them. They help you to avoid leaving money or opportunity on the table for someone else. A value question is getting the prioritization, that the hierarchy of needs from your buyer. So your buyer says, oh, yeah, we need to do X, Y, and Z. That's an outcome. You might ask, what happens if you don't do X, Y, and Z? They give you an answer. We still need to know, out of X, Y, and Z, which one matters most, and why is that it matters most?
Mm-hmm.
That's the need we want to respond to, not the one that we might otherwise be pouncing on because it's easier. We'd call it low-hanging fruit.
Correct, yeah.
So that's a great question. We need that one. Another one that sometimes gets asked, but not often enough, is the R. That's a rationale question. I want to know the things related to your decision, the decision you're going to make. What are the criteria? Who's involved? And so on. Sometimes those slip in as qualifying questions. But I also want to know about decisions that you've made in the past. Walk me through your process for how you decided on that vendor. And the reason I want to know that is that the next time there's an opportunity, I want to get into your process. I want to know those steps. I want to get into your head and know how you made those decisions earlier so that I can intersect sooner. So we need to get a little bit more fine-tuned on that. So the V and the R, I put those in because I see them about a third of the time from sellers when I'm out field coaching. And then it's these next three. We have left the I, the S, and the E. Those are the ones that virtually no sellers are asking. So here's the opportunity to immediately differentiate yourself. The E is an example question. It is the equivalent of putting your buyer behind the wheel of a car and asking them to take it for a test drive so that they can begin to experience something about your product. That's why, you know, when you go to buy a car, they put you behind the wheel so that you can never imagine yourself without that car again. We don't always get to do that because we sell intangibles or we're working with people over the phone. So instead, we have to ask them a question that gets them living something out, gets them talking about an example, gets them imagining the contrast between the future state and the current not-so-great state that they might be in. And the more that they can envision that experience, the richer that example can be that they give us, the more and more they do the selling work themselves, which I love when that happens. I'm throwing a lot out here. This must feel like a fire hose.
This is no, I'm loving it. I'm like a sponge over here.
Okay. Let me talk about the question that's an easy one in theory and a hard one in practice, because we have a natural resistance to asking it. And that's the I. It's an issue question. This is the only one out of the eight that's about us as sellers. And we can ask it in two ways. We can ask it reactively. So they have told us some objection, or they have some barrier to doing business with us, or we screwed up in the past, whatever it is. And there is already an issue on the table.
Mm-hmm.
What many people do is duck and dodge and maybe apologize, but we seldom ask a question at this moment to allow people to vent and get it all out there so we can move past it. So a reactive issue question sounds something like, "Oh, Mary Lou, I am really sorry that happened. Tell me about it. Tell me what the implications were because that happened." Boom. You're gonna give it all to me. You're going to exhaust and expend all of that negativity. It's no longer going to be a barrier between us. I just listened to you. I created value because we took this bad thing, and yet I allowed you to give part of it back to me. So there's an opportunity there to build some trust.
Mm-hmm.
So a question in that moment of crisis, uncomfortable but very powerful. The other way you can use this easier is proactively, but it requires a little humility to do this. So again, some natural resistance occurs. But a proactive issue question tries to prevent there from being an issue. So it's about, tell me what I can do. I really, as we continue working together, I want to make sure that I'm doing business the way you like to do business with salespeople. What would you like to see me do? Or, hey, we've been doing business together a long time. I want to perform a service check. What would you like to see me doing differently? These are all questions that prevent issues, even small niggling ones that are in the back of someone's mind.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just get them out.
Yep.
And then finally, another very powerful, buyers like this kind of question a lot. They like them all, by the way. Least of all, they like data because it's boring to them. But the next one, the last one to talk about, is the S. That's a solution question. A solution question plants seeds. It gets people reacting to alternatives, not that you propose to them, but that you ask in the form of a question so that you can get a read on potential objections, so that you can make them think outside of what they're already doing. It usually starts something like, "So what are your thoughts about?" Or "Have you ever," if you want to make it very narrow and get a closed-ended answer, "have you ever considered?" And when I put the idea out there, they're going to have a reaction, so I know what that reaction is. They will often say, that's a good question. I've never thought about it that way. And then you know that you've got something germinating. You've got the beginnings of an idea, and you don't have to come in cold later on to surprise them about or dramatically change something that they had never thought about before. So that's rapid speed. Those are the eight.
Amazing. Amazing. My first question that came to mind as I'm listening to this is, a lot of folks nowadays are leveraging technology to have conversations, conversationally, whatever you want to call it, within an email engine. Not necessarily having the phone dialogue questioning, but want to learn more about embedding questions within the email so that they'll lean into the computer a little bit, the buyer, and say, "Wow, no one's ever really asked me that." Does this work with non-voice communication as well? Have you experimented
email,
with it? Yep.
Email, voicemail. As I mentioned, I do a lot of field research. I shadow sellers. I interview buyers. So I have firsthand examples. In that little tool that I mentioned, there are questions that are used in the first minute of a phone call, but at least six out of the eight, I'd have to go back and look, but at least six out of the eight have also had email variations that were effective.
Interesting. You hear that, people? We have we try to start working on 6 to 8 touches where we're creating value in our email engine to just help us warm up the chill of accounts and people who are either dormant or we haven't spoken with for a while, or they came inbound to us and we don't necessarily have, we haven't started the conversation yet. So we're always looking for ways to be able to like you said, get people just stimulated, get them excited, get them thinking about what kind of conversation they're eventually going to have with us when we do reach them on the phone. So having a tool like this is invaluable for those of us who are hyper-personalizing our emails, for those of us who are still working through cold emails where we have a list that is maybe, you know, hasn't been touched for a while. You kind of want to warm up the chill and see who's going to bubble up to the top. But adding the value within the email is a way that we're going to shrink that lag in the pipeline and also have the first conversation be more meaningful. This is great stuff, Deb. I love it.
You know, it's valuable. It really works. And to get to a place where you're more comfortable asking questions, you have to try some things and not be afraid that questions will get a negative reaction. They really don't, not nearly as often as we think they will. You aren't like the prosecuting attorney with your witness up in the courtroom. Those scenarios that are negative about questions are really exaggerated. The positive perceptions, the reactions of buyers far, vastly outweigh anything negative that you might be concerned about.
Plus, this is grounded in research. So for those skeptics out there in the audience, this is based on statistically relevant research of buyers and what they want to see in terms of conversation from us. So it's not like you're inventing this out of a vacuum, Deb. You have data to support each of these elements and why they're important to utilize within the sales conversation as we march people down the pipeline. This is great. Great. So how do people get it?
It's not just sales results, but it's also data that comes directly from our buyers, and we so seldom get an opportunity to have that kind of data.
Yeah, I mean, and sponsored by a university, you said, as well. So you're going to have a good breadth of audience. You're not going to have, usually when you think of audiences, you think of maybe all SaaS people or all tech people, tech companies or healthcare. It sounds like this is a broad spectrum of verticals that you also were able to get information from. So that's great.
Yeah, it was a Santa Clara University, a Qualtrics panel study, and the 530 B2B buyers represent every sector, different age groups. We did demographic sorts of every type, complex sales, more transactional sales, all B2B. People who were buying for a lot of years, people who are newer to buying, people who make sole buying decisions versus those who are working groups. You name it, it's in there. You can slice and dice it lots of ways.
And is that available for people in our audience, leaders who want to get into the data a little bit more, the actual results of
the survey? So the movement is called Stop Selling and Start Leading. And yes, there is more and more of that becoming available as we continue our analysis. But stay tuned for that on the webpage for Stop Selling and Start Leading. And in webinars and podcasts like this, we're releasing a little at a time. We're continuing to do seller side research, which I'd invite your audience to be a part of if they'd like to be. Mm-hmm. And it's all coming together in various articles. The Sales Journal, Journal of Professional Sales Management is featuring an article soon. So there's a lot that's coming out, lots of places where people could go for that.
And I'll be sure to post some of these links on the show notes page so that people can, just click on a link to get more information about where Deb is, what she's doing, what she's up to. What's the best way for us to get a hold of you for a one-on-one or to get more information about the work that you're doing?
Just email me. I welcome and enjoy talking with people. deb.calvert@peoplefirstps.com. People First is spelled out. PS stands for Productivity Solutions. People First PS.
People First PS. Okay. And the new book, and the book again, the title for everybody to go immediately download from Amazon.
Get you connected.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The book is called Discover Questions, Get You Connected.
Discover Questions, Get You Connected. And also, Deb has a Bright Talk channel, the Sales Experts channel. A lot of people are starting to share their expertise there as well. So for those of you who want to continue to learn and master and in the comfort of your own home and listen when you want, that channel is available. And I'll put that link in as well. Deb, thank you so much for your time. This is a wonderful, wonderful framework that you have. And it's truly something that the folks that are listening to this podcast must really adopt, because we are only doing those three, maybe four, that I counted out of the eight. And if we can sprinkle in the other and start getting in a rhythm with our cadences and sequences and voicemails and emails, boy, life is going to be a lot more fun when we finally get into that conversation with our prospects. Thanks again, Deb. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mary Lou. My pleasure.